110 kegs of beer later, the highest attendance we've ever had at the 2019 Oktoberfest in St. Paul. Today is the summary. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
Where Germanic-speaking European countries,
Germany,
Deutschland,
Austria,
Österreich,
Switzerland,
Schweiz,
blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. What a weekend. We are just back in the studio of the GI, podcast. Catherine, welcome.
Moin, moin.
And Claudia is here as well. Claudia, hi.
Grüß Gott.
This was a significant weekend. Thousands upon thousands of people. We actually don't even know the exact number yet. We do know it was 110 kegs of beer, plus two small little kegs that we tapped for audience entertainment and a couple of free beers, of course, as well. Thanks goes out in this particular regard to Paulana, who especially brewed the Wiesen beer for us and shipped it over from Munich. Phenomenal liquid. If you haven't had it this year, then make sure to stop by next year. But what else was notable and really interesting about the Oktoberfest this year? Anything that stood out to you two?
Over 1,000 pretzels were eaten, or at least went over the counter. I am assuming they were eaten.
Yep, and we were very honored to have visitors or a visitor from the German embassy who came and supported us in the Wunderbar Together campaign in our apprenticeship pavilion. So we had some really good support from other organizations as well.
Mayor Carter was as well.
Mayor Carter was polkaing with Linda.
Yep.
That was quite a sight to behold. So thank you to Mayor Carter for coming as well.
Yep, and I do believe we had more vendors and people, organizations participating than in previous years. So it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. This was the third year where the GAI hosted it at the Schmidt Brewery, and it continues to evolve and grow as we figure out, how to do an event at that scale.
And of course, we had the Kaisersfeste this year for the first time, which I believe we can call a success. It was to honor Bruce Larson, the late Kaiser, was a special small tent where lots of talking, good liquids as well, and a whole hog and some dessert were all available.
I think you're responsible for the apple crisp cake concoction that was served as well, which, by the way, kudos, that was fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much.
I did steal a small slice of it.
I do know she was in the kitchen on Friday and Saturday early prepping for that.
And since we're talking Bruce Larson is actually quote-unquote at fault, if we want to say that, for the Oktoberfest. He started it in 2000, and one of Bruce's little vices was to fire cannons of a variety of sizes and just basically scare the crap out of people who were unprepared. And unfortunately, Bruce left us 2 years ago, but he passed on one of those cannons to Randy Dahl, who actually was at the Oktoberfest on Saturday, and at noon, in memory of Bruce, fired a phenomenal cannon shot that, if you were anywhere close, it was quite loud. It was, I think, audible all across the Schmidt Brewery grounds. So,
and miles and miles beyond.
And miles beyond. So thanks certainly goes out to Randy for upholding the tradition. Other than that, I did have the pleasure and privilege to co-MC with Mark, and that was at the Festzelt, at the big tent for a little while. We did some trivia for the first time, probing people on their knowledge of the actual Oktoberfest in Munich. And then what I did not expect was how absolutely popular Dachshund races. So basically our puppy bowl was. There were, I would say, conservatively 200 plus people around the little racetrack. Mm-hmm. And a good number of dogs showed up, pocket-sized dogs, and they cleared the hurdles, and some of them ran up all the way to the finishing line to look at the line, turn around, and run right back to their release person. So quite an interesting little race. And also this, of course, already sets up next year. I think this is one of the staple items that is going to stay. So if you have a short four-legged friend, now is the time to train and then enter for next year.
Yep, an interesting fact. We did speak with some people, at the apprenticeship booth and at the GAI booth about Dachshund, and because people were carrying their little furry friends. And they asked us about Dachshund in Germany, and we said, well, nobody really calls them Dachshund, even though that is the appropriate name, but in Germany everybody calls them Dackel.
Correct.
Is that the same in Austria?
Yes, it is. Dackel.
Dackel. So that's, for those who do have this breed of dog, if you want to call him by their German name, call him Dackel.
Yeah, and then last but not least, we did have Steinheben. Of course, it made a triumphant return. We did have a lot more participants this year, and once again, the call goes out for all those who want to test whether they can lift 515 pounds, which I think is still the only stone that is functioning in this type of environment, such as Oktoberfest, within the United States. So certainly for the gentlemen and perhaps some of the ladies who want to do this next year, get started now. This little thing is actually quite heavy, but it's manageable. So certainly I would extend that invitation to you. Other than that, I think we're still waiting for final numbers. Overall, I think we can say that the Oktoberfest was a phenomenal success, and I think the weather was cooperative.
At least on Saturday. Friday was a little chilly.
But overall, I think if this is a sign of things to come, then next year should be phenomenal as well.
Yep, and if you don't want to wait all the way till next year, September, keep an eye on our website for ongoing programs and events. The next larger event that we have is usually in the beginning of December, which is our two-day holiday open house.
Outstanding. And that was sort of the 10,000-foot summary of the Oktoberfest before we even know all the details and all the nooks and grannies. But of course, once again, thank you to everyone who supported us, particularly Paulana as one of our main sponsors to be helping us with this incredible event. But moving on, Catherine, I have no idea what you have prepared. Catherine is, just for your visual entertainment, sitting within a stack of books. And I'm not sure what the significance is.
Yes, I will be giving sort of a 5,000-foot overview over our student library. As most of you know, we have a library in the library.
In the bibliothek.
In the bibliothek. What some of you might not know is that a small section really is reserved just for language learners, where we have from A1 to B2 all sorts of reading materials, from short stories to actual novellas to crime stories, because, every German likes a good krimi, that are very adequate for the different levels within the European reference frame. We also have some grammar resources there, and some of them are actually mixed. We, for example, have a German grammar in a nutshell, short and painless, as they promise. So if you would like to go a little deeper into a topic that you had in class, feel free to look for that. It's by Langenscheidt, and it's the characteristic yellow color that it has with a blue L. Other than that, we have several little, how do you call that, booklets maybe. They're not terribly long, but they're kind of the perfect size for when you want to just do a little light reading on the side. We have some by the Huber publishers, which is also the publisher of our textbooks here, most of them. And they have just stories in them, or, a longer story. And then they have exercises with them, understanding exercises. And some of them actually have a CD in the back, so you can listen to it being read while you're reading along. Or you could listen to it in the car. I know CDs seem antiquated at this point, but I think there's still enough people that have a CD player that might enjoy this.
Especially in their car.
Especially in the car, exactly. And if you're super techie, you can maybe, get it in an MP3 format or something. I'm not really the super techie one. We also have a series that's called Felix und Theo. There are several books of those, also a nice little crime series. They are still in the 1-3 scale that came before the European reference frame, but those basically started A2 in today's scale, I want to say.
Can I jump in here real quick, and perhaps could you explain some more about the European reference frame? Because this is a question that came up before from some of the students. What is the European reference frame? How does it apply, and why do we teach alongside that method, or at least alongside those expectations?
So a long time ago, the European Union decided that it would be a good idea, and I quite agree, to come up with characteristics for language competency and language ability. So the European Reference Frame was born, and it basically describes at what level you would need to know which vocabulary and which grammar. So we have A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, with C2 being really the level that you would have as a German Abitur student, so the college prep school, to actually go on to university. We do test these here for the Goethe Institute, but all our books, all our teaching materials are,
standardized.
Standardized, they are aligned along those categories. And so if you are, let's say, in Staat 2 or something, you would be at an A1 level. You can see that on your books, and then you could find the matching level in our little student library for a little bit of extra reading.
And since it's called European Reference Frame, I'm assuming that, for instance, French or Spanish
Correct.
Would follow along the same ideology.
Mm-hmm. I believe one country is always, one country is responsible for another country within that and those standards. And they're just Europe-wide. I mean, that is something very concrete. If somebody comes to a company, applies for a job and says, oh, I have a B1 language exam, the company knows exactly what to expect. While before, we have that here as well, when people come and say, I had 3 semesters of German, that really can mean anything.
Okay, makes perfect sense.
To Günther's point, right, it's not just something that Germans do. It's a European-wide
Absolutely.
Thing with many, many languages participating. And it kind of sets a standard reference, frame of reference for language skill and ability at those levels. And
we have been testing this for the past 15 years here for the Goethe Institute. And if you need any of these certificates for Germany, sometimes au pairs need them to get a visa in Germany or something, or some employers require them, we can certainly help you out.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was quite informative. And I think for those who are listening, of course, it should hopefully answer the question, what is this reference frame? And of course, if you have any additional questions, always feel free to email us as well. Anything else, Catherine? Or was that our in-depth grammar section of today?
Yeah.
It was an in-depth supplemental material section of today. Again, if you have questions about additional reading material, feel free to also email me or Claudia, and we'll take care of you.
How would we go about checking out a book?
At this point, it's on the honor system. So if you are a member of the GAI, you are welcome to go into the library, look around, and then take what you want to read or work with, and then please bring it back too.
Is there any time frame that we would hope to see it back? Or
we think about 2 weeks.
Okay.
If it's 2 weeks and 3 days, we won't come after you.
And no late fees.
Well, a bad conscience, but guilt.
Yeah, and obviously, awesome. In addition to that specific student section, we have a whole bunch of other materials in there. So if you are at that higher level, at a C1 or C2 level, feel free to look around in the other parts of the library, in the fiction section or in some of those other literature areas. Or what's also potentially appropriate is the children's and youth books. They tend to use easier language and, you know, easier concepts. So as we are progressing, you know, if you're at an A1 level, you look for books that are, you know, intended for younger children. As you progress, you can look for books for older children or even youth, because language development, you know, goes along. The themes or the topics may be a little bit simpler, right? Because they're mm-hmm. written for children and youth, but so is the language. So you don't just have the books that are specifically designed for language learners. You can use these other sections as well.
We have several books of the Harry Potter series, for example. So if you've read it in English, by all means, go and read it in German. Clearly, the vocabulary is somewhat magic-centered, but not just, and you will expand your vocabulary tenfold.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Catherine. Claudia, we are not resting after the Oktoberfest. We
nope.
are continuing on. What do we have in store? The next couple of months yep. are highly significant to Germany.
Right. So first of all, obviously, our language classes have all kicked off or are kicking off this week. So if you want to learn German, there's still time to register. You know, even, you know, if you miss the first couple of weeks, it's really not a big deal. You know, give me a call or check out our online registration system and sign up for classes if you want to do so. Same thing goes for Samstagsschule, which is the Saturday school for kids and teens that actually just met once so far. So there's still room and time to register. But overall, the theme for this fall is the commemoration of the 30-year anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And, you know, those of us who are a little bit older go, wow, 30 years already. You know, it seems like that time passed. And between the GEI and other organizations, there will be several events and several movies and concerts and talks and things given to commemorate that. But you know, maybe we just kind of want to talk for a minute about the whole thing around the fall of the Wall, you know, and the three of us here in this room are old enough to remember that. And
thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah. Sorry. And, you know, I mean, especially you as an Austrian, what do you remember from that?
I was in my finishing years of high school, so coming up towards that time frame. And of course, we recognize the wall basically from Vienna, more or less, knowing that there is that wall and there is that structure, and that structure essentially appeared overnight, even though the discussion was there will not be a wall. And then suddenly there was a wall. So there was a little bit of political trickery involved. And I remember actually having been taught that in history class, if you will, or in contemporary history. And with the wall suddenly coming down, I don't really think that we felt the impact in Vienna or in Austria by any means, because we're just too far removed from that. But I think we emotionally felt the impact, because there was some sense of, really unification and liberation from a system that perhaps we truly were at the forefront of as the final country before you went into the Eastern Bloc. So Austria had sort of this buffer zone, particularly Vienna being on the eastern side of Austria, this buffer zone mentality that we are perhaps not the stronghold, but sort of the last bastion, if you will, before you go over into what used to be the Czechoslovakia, which is now the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So we were kind of wedged in between there. So we recognized it, but I don't necessarily want to say that I, as a youth back then, truly resonated or felt the impact, or also, to be transparent, perhaps really even understood what that means.
I will never forget that, obviously. I mean, I was at the beginning of my high school career at that point, but it was overwhelming, and it is very hard to describe those evenings. Interestingly enough, my very first exchange to the United States took place in September of that year, when things were already brewing and, you know, nobody really knew what was going to happen. And I remember my host father saying, oh, I don't trust them. I don't trust them. But something felt different in Germany. And the night the wall came down, I know I was sitting with my cousins and we were all just listening to the radio and were in awe and hoping that, you know, no blood would be shed, hoping that everything would go somewhat peaceful. Hannover was, you know, 3 hours from Berlin, but it was fairly close to the border to Eastern Germany. So we were just not knowing. And after the wall came down, my grandma immediately went to search for her niece, whom she hadn't seen, you know, since the 50s sometime. And she found her and her family, and all of a sudden we had these new relatives that were, you know, not really that far removed, but that nobody had ever seen before. It was quite something else. And the weekend after the wall came down, Hannover was just swamped with Eastern Germans who had gotten the Begrüßungsgeld, the greeting money. I think it was 30 marks or something like that.
Wasn't it 100?
Or 100? I don't remember. Yeah. And I mean, there was no getting through in downtown Hannover, and all of a sudden the used car market was swept empty. No more used cars were to be had because they were all bought up from Eastern Germans that finally could buy a car that, you know, they didn't have to wait for 15 years.
Right. Yeah. So the car in East Germany was a Trabant or Trabi.
Or Wartburg.
Or Wartburg, right. But either way, right, as Katrin says, there were huge waiting lists, and you couldn't just go to the store or to the car dealership and buy a car. You had to be put on a waiting list. Yeah, and there were years and years and years and years that you had to wait. So I remember I had just, you know, shortly before that moved here to the United States. So I was a little bit older. I was in my early 20s already, so which means I grew up in a divided Germany. And to me, that was just the world I lived in, right? And the Cold War and all of that. And we didn't have relatives in the East. And because my dad worked for the German military, was part of the German military in West Germany, we never went to East Germany because that was the enemy at the time, right? I mean, it was truly, you know, a country divided. And I remember it was just almost incredulous because, you know, we knew even here, you know, I stayed in touch obviously with my family and with everybody and kind of heard about things were going a little different, but it just seemed so unreal that this whole concept that you grew up in your whole life now no longer exists. And, you know, for my parents or even for Katrin's parents, right, they were young people when the wall went up. So they lived in a war-torn Germany, and then the post-war period, and then a separated Germany, and then a reunited Germany. It was just very unreal to process.
How did their life change after the Mauer came down, the wall came down? How did life, I guess, adjust on the broad spectrum? Rather than going into each individual family dynamic, but how did it change across the board, I suppose?
In the East or in the West?
Well, now obviously being united, so the question is, did this somehow sort of even out? Or were there, I mean, what was the situation like?
Well, Eastern Germany was not as technologically advanced as Western Germany was, so a lot of money went into that. And in the beginning, everybody was, of course, very euphoric. Oh, we have won Germany again. You know, the oppression in the East is over. But over time, there were a lot of hard feelings, and the expressions of Ossis and Wessis, so Eastern Germans, Western Germans, emerged. And they did not agree on a lot of things. And I used to teach English at the med school in Hannover. And I know I had one class that was pretty much divided in the middle between Eastern Germans and Western Germans, and they did not get on with each other. I've never been in a class where the atmosphere was more aggressive. It was really remarkable. And this was 10 years after the wall had come down.
Was this because of different cultural perspectives or of different expectations, perhaps lower expectations from the former West Eastern Germans as opposed to higher expectations from the Western, or vice versa? Or
I think it had a lot to do with attitudes, because a lot of Vessies had this, oh, you know, we are the cooler ones. And a lot of Aussies felt that that was not okay, this kind of attitude. And I'm not saying, you know, all Vessies are bad or all Aussies are bad or anything like that, but it truly was a clash of cultures. I mean, if we see how much development happened between the 1940s and the early 1990s, just technologically, that's immense. And Eastern Germany was just not there. And just to get back to our parents and grandparents, my grandpa was born in 1906, so that means he was first in the Kaiserreich, then he was in the Weimar Republic, then he was under the Nazi regime, then he was in divided Germany, and then he was in united Germany. So for him, it was just kind of another stage. But as you said, for us, the world as we knew it ended at that point.
Yep, and I think some of it was too with some of the skilled people or the higher skilled people out of the East moved to the West because they could make more money there. Mm-hmm. So there was a kind of like not just a brain.
Well, and there were jobs.
Right, and there were jobs. So it wasn't just a brain drain, but a skills drain too. And people needed, in order to rebuild, but in order to kind of make it truly unified Germany, you know, you need to have an equal distribution of skills and labor and people and stuff. And it just seemed like there was this whole movement to
migration.
From the West to the East. And that made the people in the East or in the former East part, you know, upset, because now, you know, you have no more young people. It's kind of like the same thing, you know, here in the U.S. where all the young people leave the rural areas to go to the cities because there's more opportunity. Well, imagine if that happens in the whole country almost, where the whole country, and I'm exaggerating, right, but where a lot of that, and sadly, it's now 30 years later, and we still talk about die neuen Bundesländer, the new states. So Germany, West Germany used to have 11 states, and then with the East, you added 5 more. And they're still called the new states 30 years later. And there's still a discrepancy in economic prowess and things like that.
Economically, there was this, let's call it a rumor, because I have not yet found anyone to substantiate that. So I'm just going to ask the two of you. Perhaps you have heard that, and maybe it is true, maybe it isn't. But one of the things that we talked about in Austria is that the former Aussies, so the East Germans, after the Mauer fell, brought a lot of buying power to the Western German states, because the limited opportunities of spending, they just had more savings. And with the German mark, I believe, in the beginning having been exchanged one-to-one, there was a lot of buying power rushing in from former East Germany into West Germany, essentially drowning out the buying power of the what used to be West Germans. Is that accurate? Or
part of it is too, right? Because I believe West Germany at the time had maybe 60 million people. And then you added another 25, right? So, I mean, it's a huge amount of people considering how many people were added. You added like another 50%. So yeah, I mean, that's a lot of additional buying power, right? If you,
and back in the day, the former chancellor Kohl, who was, you know, chancellor back then, he made this announcement, oh, in 10 years we will have those blooming landscapes. I mean, blühende Landschaften, it's still an expression that everybody knows. Well, a lot of people believed it, you know, a lot of people thought, yeah, we can do this, 10 years, you know, it's a long time, everybody will be at the same level then. But it really hasn't happened. And a lot of the issues we have with the extreme right now in Germany, this is all still fallout from unification. And I mean, really in the long term fallout from the Nazi time.
Right. And then the people in the West for I don't know how long, had to pay a solidarity
tax. It's just
a solidarity
now.
Tax, right? Yeah. So if you lived in the West, you had to financially support the rebuilding of the Eastern infrastructure and economy and everything. So you had to pay an extra tax for this reunification. Solidaritätsabgabe.
What is it like today, 30 years later? Obviously, there's still the association of the terminology in new states. What is I guess, the mood, I suppose, the attitude like? Has that improved? Is it now truly one Germany, with the exception of some terminology mishaps, if you will, or some remnants of terminology that just stuck and became commonplace? What is it like?
I think that is really a very personal and individual situation. I can say for myself that because we were so close to Eastern Germany and then we had these relatives, you know, that were just across the border, basically, I can't say I'm really thinking in a separated Germany anymore. And in addition, coming here to Minnesota and living here, I mean, we have Eastern Germans here, or former Eastern Germans at the GI, we have Western Germans, and we have so much more in common compared to American culture. Then really Eastern and Western Germany is not important anymore. I mean, we talk about it sometimes, about our experiences growing up, but it's not a factor in how I view people.
Right. We just all feel like Germans.
Yes.
Right? And plus the other part is, obviously, since we now live here and have lived here for a while, we're kind of removed from the day-to-day stuff as well. And, you know, I was just in Berlin a few months ago because my brother lives there. And the big cities like Berlin, I think, you know, are in a different or different situation than probably some of the outlying areas in the former East, because Berlin,
oh, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
And speaking of Berlin, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about that or what happened in Berlin right after the fall of the wall, we're going to show a movie on November 9th, which is the actual date of the 30th anniversary, about the 10 years following the fall of the wall in Berlin. It's called Berlin Babylon, or Babylon Berlin. One is a series, one is a movie.
Babylon Berlin, I think, is a series on Netflix.
Okay, so then it's the other way around. Then it's Berlin Babylon. And it shows the 10 years following the fall of the wall in Berlin. So imagine, you know, you have a divided city with a wall in between, east and west, and now suddenly it's a united city, it's a unified city again. And there was a building boom, the whole town, the whole city was a huge construction site for years and years and years and years. But now you also had duplicate things, and some stuff that was interesting that I learned was actually never separated were things like sewers. Right? Because how do you separate the sewer system? So the sewer system, or even some of the subway systems, were, even during the times when the wall existed, were still connected, because those were built before. And how do you separate the sewer system? Right. So, yeah. So there are just interesting things, you know, talking about infrastructure. But now, you know, if you go visit Berlin and you still see some of the commemorative sites and stuff. But, you know, there's also still bricks along the streets on Berlin where the wall used to go. And if you just imagine that just 30 years ago, you could have walked on one side of the wall or on the other, but you couldn't have walked across. Right. And so we're showing this film on November 9th. And so it's kind of a little bit of a twist on the fall of the wall. So it's not showing the actual time of what happened or what led up to it, but what happened in Berlin the 10 years after.
I think one thing I would like to add is that for us in the West, it seemed very much, oh, you know, Western Germany is going in to save the oppressed and the, you know, meek or something like that. But that is not necessarily the view people have in the East. And there are plenty of people that say, you know, we didn't need saving. We were doing just fine. And there are vastly different perspectives, of course, within Eastern Germany and within the United Germany now. But it's not all, you know, oh, we came in, as in we, the West, came in and saved everyone. And for many people in the East, things got worse and not better.
Right.
Well, I mean, as you can already tell, we briefly just wanted to touch on this, and it turned into an in-depth discussion, and even that conversation wasn't even anywhere close to being deep enough. There is a lot more coming as we celebrate the 30-year anniversary of the wall coming down, and there will be, like Claudia just mentioned, films and events, and I'm sure that we'll probably get one or two podcasts together, hopefully with people who experienced either one of those sides, to truly get at least some authenticity, if you will, from the other side of the wall as well, with their personal impressions and what they perceived from the other side, which of course for us is impossible to truly step into those shoes.
Yep. So if you just want to go ahead and just mark your calendar already. So the actual anniversary was November 9th, and we will have an event here at the Germanic American Institute. But leading up to it, the University of St. Thomas is showing a series of films. It's called Film Festival, 30 Years of the Fall of the Berlin Wall. Check out, you know, the information on St. Thomas German program. Film Festival, 30 Years of the Fall of the Berlin Wall, and they have a series of films. And then on Monday, November 4th, there will be a speaker also again at the University of St. Thomas, and the title of the talk is Good Thing You Didn't Know, The Real Story of the Fall of the Berlin Wall. Again, look for some more information about that.
Jeffrey Engel will be back in town for
Jeffrey
that one.
Jeffrey Engel, so those of you who've listened and heard him talk, he's a super engaging speaker who knows, you know, who focuses on this time around Cold War and these kinds of things. And so he's going to be speaking about that. So kind of as we're moving, you know, further on in September and then into October and November, look for more programs and events from the University of St. Thomas and the GEI related to the 30th anniversary of the fall of the wall. But on a happier note, or not even happier note, on a less political note.
on a different note.
On a different note, right? On a less political note. Before that, if you are into classical music, then we have a couple of things for you at the GEI this fall. We're partnering with the Minnesota Opera on a program called Behind the Curtain with Minnesota Opera. The Minnesota Opera is performing Elektra, which is a opera by, what's his name, Strauss. I'm blanking on his first name.
Johannes. Richard or Johannes?
Richard.
Richard Strauss?
Richard Strauss. So Elektra is going to be performed by the Minnesota Opera. There is an event here in conjunction with Minnesota Opera on Friday, October 11th. So mark your calendars for that. And then some of you may be wondering when our Saturday morning breakfast is going to start again. And we have changed the way we're doing breakfast a little bit, and we're no longer hosting a weekly breakfast, but we are going to have the breakfast, the Kaffeestube, on occasion. And the first one this year or this time around is going to be on Saturday, October 19th. So again, if you miss our Saturday morning Kaffeestube breakfast, Saturday, October 19th. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about German genealogy, or if you want to do German genealogy, that can be combined with a Kaffeestube. So it can be a Kaffeestube and a genealogy workshop on October 19th. And those are some of the events that are coming up. And then I mentioned there's another classical event that we're hosting later on in November, and we'll talk about that in a separate podcast. But those are some of the things that are happening now here earlier in October.
Well, obviously no rest for the wicked.
Nope.
Oktoberfest, plenty of events coming up. The library, of course, is at your disposal. Do we have anything else to add, or was that pretty much it for today's recording?
I believe we have exhausted, and we are exhausted.
Yep.
Yeah, as you can perhaps tell from the voices, it's been a rather turbulent couple of weeks, and this is also one of the reasons why we've taken a little bit of a hiatus of the recordings, just simply to get those massive events under wraps and make them successful. So with that being said, Catherine, thank you very much. Claudia, thank you.
My pleasure.
And we will be signing off for today. Future episodes, of course, to come. And we will take a little closer look at the 30th anniversary of the Mauer fire. And keep you posted, of course, at events or about events that are coming up regarding that, including movie nights, breakfasts, class times, and everything else. This is Michael signing off. We'll talk with you soon.